Greetings, greetings once again to all my enemies and all my friends. Well, you may have heard the news, but stand by now for the worldview. It is the Weekly Worldview, and I'm your host, Doug McBurney. Welcome back. It's the show where we don't take calls. We don't tolerate sponsors, but we do help focus you on the events of the week through the lens of original thought. It's so good to be back. I wish I could have been with you last weekend, but I was in New York City and New Jersey, oddly enough, which I don't recommend. If you have to work in New York, I recommend you just pony up the money to get a hotel in New York. That's all. Because New York is not as dreadful as Washington, D.C. Or at least it wasn't as dreadful for me this time. But New Jersey was. And I exchanged the virus that I caught in Washington. I have apparently exchanged it for a new viral infection straight out of Gotham. So you'll have to bear with me on that. But in the meantime, I know I missed a lot of big stories. I know we had the we had the president vetoed the border crisis rebellion by his fellow Republicans. They voted against the idea that there's a crisis at the border. I just read that in the last 2 months, some 85,000 illegal immigrants have been released into the general population. 85,000 in 2 months. To me, that sounds like a crisis. Then there's the methamphetamine and the opioids. Anyway, but the Republicans showed their true colors, the Republicans, voting against the idea that there's a crisis, and the president vetoed them. And so thank you, Mr. Trump, for doing something right. We appreciate it. And what else happened? You had Biden versus Beto. But what a laugh riot, huh? A competition for king of the gaffes. And Joe Biden holds the all-time record for the most gaffes ever made by a politician who ever won another election, proving how stupid the American electorate is in general, the fact that Joe Biden ended up as vice president. But I didn't watch too much of Biden versus Beto, I'm sure it was fun. We have the big college cheating scandal. Well, let's get back to that because I want to go. We'll come back to that. But I want to go now to the big story, which is, of course, the mass killing. At least 120 people now have been killed. And that's just since February in Nigeria. Over 140 homes have been destroyed by rampaging Fulani Muslim herdsmen. Rampaging through Nigeria, killing Christians. This past Monday alone, 52 Christians were killed and their homes were burned to the ground by Muslims. And that followed an attack that had happened the Sunday in which 17 people were killed and about a dozen homes were burned to the ground. Christian Solidarity Worldwide, which is an unrecognized NGO, the United Nations, they're unrecognized. Christian, they estimate that in 2018 alone, thousands of Christians were killed by rampaging militant Muslim Fulani herdsmen. They call it a genocide in the middle belt of Nigeria. They say this is flat out genocide. And so, obviously, the killing has to stop. The killing has to stop. The Muslims have to be... The Muslims there have to be defeated and killed. And hopefully the government there in Nigeria will be able to protect the Christians and subdue the Muslims. Yes. Now let's go. That was from the war file. We're going to go deeper into the war file for a story that I found interesting, and I'm not sure how I feel about it yet. I've got a story here from, let's see, this is from Fox News. A documentary filmmaker and a former Marine named Miles Lugosi. He wants to show everyone what combat is really like. He's releasing a new film called Combat Obscura. And, well, he says he aims to change the sanitized and sanctified view of the military by showing what actual combat is like. He says, quote, veterans of this war in Afghanistan are at a point where we're sick of the hero worshiping and the sugarcoating. And a lot of us are sick of people saying thanks for your service without any real conversation about what we did and what actually happened. So this fellow was a combat photographer, a combat videographer, who went into combat with the Marines with a camera so that the Marines could film, I guess, like, you know, recruiting videos, or I don't really know why. But he shot a lot of footage that was approved by the Marine Corps, edited and packaged and distributed to news organizations and whatnot. Well, he said he shot a lot of footage that was never approved by the Marine Corps. He said, I shot what they told me to shoot, but then we kept shooting, capturing what life is really like in a combat zone amongst Marines. Anyway, I think if the American people ever saw what it was actually like just to be a Marine, let alone the combat part of it, it would definitely take everyone's glamorized opinion down a notch or two. Okay, I'll just leave it at that. And then combat, if we were to show the American people what combat is actually like, I think that could be detrimental to the security of the nation. Because any sane person who saw what combat was actually like would never volunteer for that. And so we'd never be able to raise an army. So I'm torn on this. I'm not sure how I feel about it. So I feel like what he's doing is wrong. And that's where I'm leaning at this juncture. The military says they have decided not to pursue legal action. Why? Because the statute of limitations has expired on the film this fella shot. So what's really astonishing to me is we've been in at war in Afghanistan long enough for the statute of limitations to expire. That should raise red flags. The fact that the war has gone on this long in that particular area, that speaks volumes to America's ability to kill and destroy our enemies in an efficient manner. And I just don't think this is going to help. That's all. All right, I've got my... Excuse me while I move this throat-soothing lozenge to the other side of my mouth. My extremely attractive audio engineer, she calls these throat candy. Yeah. She says you're always reaching for your throat candy the minute you get a little scratch.
I don't know how to pronounce that.
It's a lozenge. Fisherman's Friend Extra Strong. Original Extra Strong. I'm going to get another one ready here. In the meantime, what do we have here? The college cheating. I'll come back to the college cheating. Oh, yes, the Yellow Vests. The Yellow Vests continue their protests in France, despite the fact that Macron, the girlish prime minister there, it's got to be at least 6 weeks ago, he threatened to open up on him with live ammunition. He has not done that. Emmanuel, where is the live ammo? Come on, we could end this thing tomorrow. You could end it with just a few rounds of live ammo. And now they're breaking the windows and they're overturning the car. They're returning to violence after the Yellow Vests had gone, tried to do what does CNN call the mostly peaceful protests. That's how CNN referred to all the Black Lives Matter and the Occupy Wall Street. Mostly peaceful. That means except for the violent parts. So the Yellow Vests had tried to pull off the mostly peaceful. Now they're getting mostly violent again. And, well, somebody's going to get killed. And, Mr. Macron, it is your obligation to make sure it's not some innocent French citizen that if anyone is going to get killed, it should be someone with a mask on carrying a club. That's who should be shot and killed right there. And then that would end that. But anyway, the French have lost. They've lost any semblance of assuming that they have any authority to tell anybody anything ever at any time. They have lost any self-confidence that they ever had from their 1,000 years of dramatic influence on human history. That's all been flushed down the toilet as they're just a bunch of porn-addicted homos, I think. All right. Now, but let's come back over here where we go into the culture file. A story from Newswise.com reports on a brand new research article published in the Journal of Abnormal Psychology. And the reports are that the percentage of young Americans experiencing mental health disorders has risen significantly over the past decade. Okay, I probably could have told you that without a study, but now we have it. It's actually been documented by professionals. This was research published by the American Psychological Association. Adolescents in the late 2010s versus the mid-2000s are experiencing serious psychological distress, major depression, or suicidal thoughts, or actual suicide attempts. Lead researcher Gene Twenge over from San Diego State University suggests that a generational shift in mood disorders is afoot. He says this isn't this isn't just an overall increase in mental depression and mental illness among all age groups. This is specifically amongst the youngsters born in the early 2000s, growing up in the mid-2010s, which is where we find ourselves. The research was based on survey responses for more than 200,000 adolescents aged 12 to 17, from 05 to 17, from 2005 to 2017, and almost 400,000 adults from 2008 to 2017. So this is big data. I mean, this is a legitimately large study. The researcher, Gene Twenge, PhD, believes this trend may be partially due to increased use of electronic communication and digital media and the fact that the youngsters are not sleeping as much as previous generations, which probably some truth to that, right? But what I think is behind it is the full-on molestation of the minds of the children. Well, it goes back further than 2000, but hey, let's start there since that's where the researchers started. And since the mid-2000s, basically the homosexualization, the trannyization, and the pornification pumped out to all these kids through smartphones at the speed of light. And yeah, it's messing with their heads. They're going to be basket cases. The future of civilization is going to be entrusted to children who've been abused, dramatically abused by their parents. And that's not going to end well. I was just reading an article that I may get to later in more detail, but England is going to institute an age block for pornography. They're going to make the porn websites confirm the age of viewers, consumers, by having them upload their passports. So they're not going to just rely on, are you 18, click here. You're actually going to have to upload your passport or some government documentation to prove your age so that they can turn on the spigot of pornography and pump that into your house. And privacy advocates are concerned that all this data is going to be used for nefarious purposes because the people running these dirty websites aren't really such good people. And so they've painted themselves into a corner of idiocy instead of just ruling that pornography should be illegal. And then nobody has to upload anybody's data, and the pornographers would be arrested and punished to the full extent of the law. End of problem. And we would stop abusing the next generation whose minds we're going to ruin before they can take care of us as we get older. It's not love that left you standing. It's not love. It's the Weekly Worldview, and I'm your host, Doug McBurney. Welcome back. It's so good to be back after a week in New York, meeting thousands and thousands of people, one of whom obviously was carrying some sort of bug. But we're glad to be here and glad to have you here. So we'll continue in the culture file with the youth as the students went on strike this past Friday. Did anybody notice? All right. Excuse me while I clear my throat. So anyway, the students, well, here, let's just read from France 24, Channel 24 over in France. Tens of thousands of students skipped school last Friday in coordinated school strikes to protest the lack of action against climate change. Okay. Yes, and they wanted Friday off. Uh-huh. Why didn't they skip Tuesday? They skipped Friday because, well, they're not total idiots, right? Now, these are coordinated strikes inspired by a 16-year-old Swedish activist named Greta. And Greta says that her action to strike to draw attention to the perilous impact of climate change upon her generation is driven by dramatic headlines about climate change. And here's what she has a message for leaders, political leaders around the world. She says, quote, "I want you to panic. I want you to feel the fear I feel every day." So in addition to the homosexualization of our children and the molestation of their minds via pornography, they're also being molested intellectually by being convinced that the fact that they're alive on the planet is destroying the planet, and she wants the political leaders to feel the fear she feels every day. And you know what? I believe that she is afraid. I honestly believe that these young people, they're not, they don't have the capacity to analyze and judge between propaganda and truth, because they've been lied to their whole lives since they were little kids. They've been told they evolved from nothing, that they're going nowhere, that there is no God, and that they're to blame, that human beings are destroying the planet. They've been lied to their whole lives, and so they believe all this stuff. It's a very sad state of affairs for the youngsters. So they all skip school. And now, apparently, she wants this type of protest every Friday. And almost every student I've talked to thinks it's a great idea. Every Friday, let's skip school. And if the climate holds up, right? It might be too hot. You might want to stay in school because they have air conditioners. I have other quotes. But you know what? I just don't care enough. They compare the Green New Deal to the actual New Deal. So talk about brainwash. One of the students quoted who was out there striking on Friday. He says, "People say the Green New Deal seems like a radical and dangerous idea, but people thought the same thing about Roosevelt's New Deal." And no kidding, because it was. he calls Roosevelt's New Deal legislation credited with ending the Great Depression.
Okay.
Of course, that's what all the morons have been taught, is that Roosevelt's New Deal is what pulled us out of the Depression, which is a total lie. Roosevelt's New Deal prolonged the Depression by several years, and it was only World War II that ended the Depression. Things got really depressing from 1939 until 1945, and then finally we pulled out of it. Anyway, the strikers say, here's what they say, quote, "Because adults won't take our future seriously, we, the youth, are forced to. And that is why we strike," as they stand outside their school with a Coke and a vape pen and stand up for their future. All right. Okay, and now it gets worse. Deeper into the culture file, we find more delirium. This on the feminine side of things. where women have gone on birth strike. Birth strike, I tell you. Yes. Young women are joining a group vowing to not have any children. The group is calling itself Birth Strike. And consisting of people who claim they are, quote, too concerned by the consequences of ecological collapse to have children. Blythe, 33-year-old birth striker, says, quote, I'm terrified. I'm terrified. Our planet is in a kind of collapse. I can't bring a child into that. The natural world is collapsing around us, and it's actually happening right now. And I'm so disappointed by the response of authorities to the crisis. I'm so freaked out by it. Everything I've read that basically last year I came to the decision I could not bring a child into that. Unquote. So we've got young women whose minds have been so poisoned, and there's such a major guilt trip laid upon them about this so-called climate change. She goes on, her and others in this interview, the Women on Birth Strike, they quote a report from the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change. Now, do you people remember the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change? It was utterly discredited years ago. They released the emails of these scientists cooking the books and lying to each other in the phony hockey stick. But these kids, they never got the memo. They still believe, the IPCC, by the way, their latest report is what's giving some young people the impression that it's all over in 12 years. We got 12 years. If we don't all become Marxists within the next 12 years, it's all over. Anyway. Well, this birth strike group, according to WorldNet Daily, they have 60 members. That's 60. Hey, but at one point, the Nazi Party only had 60 members, right? So, I mean, when you start getting delusional, crazy, brainwashed people together, you've got to be careful of what the consequences could be. This needs to be nipped in the bud. We should stop allowing the big lie of climate change. But I guess it's too late to stop it. The horse is out of the barn, so to speak. Listen to Alice from Bristol, England. I'm depressed every day because of the ecological crisis, and I'm terrified of passing this burden onto a child. There could be maybe only 10% of nature left when my child is growing up. 10% of nature left? Lady, are you crazy? For crying out loud. We're just destroying everything. I'm so unhappy. Our priorities are upside down. So these are women in their early 30s who for the past 20 years, of the past 25 years, have been fed a steady diet of guilt and socialism and atheism. And this is what you end up with. You're depressed. And really, this is the ultimate deception that's been pulled off against these kids. The ultimate deception, the ultimate lie told to them by their parents, their teachers, and the governing officials. And if they went to church, it was told to them from the pulpit as well, that it's human activity and carbon dioxide and fossil fuels that are destroying everything. And it's the flatulence of the cows, those hamburgers you like to eat, they're destroying the planet. And you know, it's the ultimate deception because in reality, in truth, we are destroying everything. But it has nothing to do with the climate or cow flatulence or fossil fuels, petroleum products or hairspray or GMOs. It's got nothing to do with any of that. It's got everything to do with calling immorality good. And teaching children that immorality is good and that good is immoral. Legalizing theft and murder and sexual immorality. That's how we're destroying everything. It's not going to end with a climate collapse and an ecological disaster. It's going to end with Europe being overrun by the Muslims and the Chinese. And the same thing is in store for America, hot on their heels. That's what it's all about. So forget about feeling guilty about liking hamburgers or driving your car. I'm surprised that the children are capable of feeling guilty about anything. But I suppose that ecological crimes like the internal combustion engine and cooking beef, I think these are the only type of things these kids have ever been taught to make moral judgments about. Everything else, anything goes. You can sleep with whoever you want. You can identify as whatever kind of freak you want to. But if you drive your car, you should feel guilty. If you burn any oil, you should feel horrible. I mean, the kids are using words like, I'm terrified. I want you to panic. Right? It's unbelievable. These people at the IPCC should be arrested. They should have been arrested years ago when all the fake, all that leaked. Anyways. Kids, it's going to be okay. All right. And it's their parents who are really to blame. It's the parents who really bear the major responsibility. The children, after all, are just that. They're children. Their malleable skulls can be crafted into whatever you like. It's the parents who are the problem. So this brings us back to the college cheating scandal, which I find just hilarious. It's uproariously funny, is what it is. Can you imagine two multimillionaires sitting around, mom and dad, talking about how to get Buffy into USC? What are we going to do, dear? Buffy can never pass the test. She's kind of stupid. She basically strips on Instagram for money. But I'd really like to be able to tell our friends that she goes to USC. I know. Let's invest $500,000 so that we can cheat our way into then being charged $100,000 a year so that at parties we can sit around with a glass of wine and brag to all of our friends how Buffy goes to USC. I'm your host, Doug McBurney. Welcome back. I'm back. You're back. Everybody's back. The kids have gone around the bend, but we're all back, and maybe we can do something to pull them back from the edge. I hope so. But things are getting, well, let's just go to the domestic tranquility file. A report from the South Bend Tribune out of Granger, Indiana. Police arrived at a family's Indiana home at about 11 p.m. after reports of a shooting. And the 11-year-old son of Indiana State Police Officer Matt Makowski surrendered without incident. Well, except for the shooting. The boy's mother told police that she and her husband were asleep when she heard a loud sound and her husband began screaming in pain. He was screaming in pain because he had been shot by his 11-year-old son. Yes, she says she found her husband's service weapon on the floor outside the room and locked herself in the room and called 911 for fear that her 11-year-old son was going to kill her and her husband. She locked the door until police arrived. So the police asked the boy later, "Why did you shoot your father?" And he said he told the police he wanted a PlayStation, an Xbox, and a computer, and that if he didn't get them, there was going to be a part two to this whole situation. Yeah. Mm-hmm. The boy also told police that he intended to shoot his father in the head, but he couldn't do so because of the way his dad was lying in the bed. So the only thing that saved dad was that dad happened to be in a position where the kid couldn't see his head or thought he shot him in the head. Terrifying. According to the South Bend Tribune, the boy has a history of behavioral problems at school, and his parents had recently taken his video games away and removed them from the home. All right. Prosecutors have filed a petition against the boy alleging delinquency for attempted murder. Delinquency for... That's a juvenile equivalent of a criminal charge for attempted murder. Delinquency. All right. So parents, grounding your kids and taking things away from your kids, that's not the healthy way to discipline your children. This young man was obviously never properly disciplined. It's very obvious. He was never properly trained to have respect for authority and a fear of God. He never had any of that. So you take his video games away, he might just shoot and kill you. Shocking, huh? An 11-year-old boy. It's unbelievable. All right. And dad survived because he happened to be in an awkward fetal position or something under the. Otherwise, this would be a story of yet another family detonation. And I think it still qualifies, frankly. It's just that the kid couldn't hit his target. All right. Now, speaking of that, we'll go to Domestic Tranquility File. Do you remember the stories about the Sunday school teacher whose wife was killed by a panhandler? The story erupted all over the media. It seems like it was 2-3 months ago. Let me see. I could probably find it here. It was a few months ago. The story was that the Sunday school teacher stopped to help a panhandler, and the panhandler killed his wife. That was the story, and the story captivated the country for a moment or two because the media jumped all over the Good Samaritan angle of it. In fact, the term Good Samaritan was all over the newspapers. By the way, that comes from the Bible, just in case you didn't know. The whole concept of the Good Samaritan. Anyway... So the story was all over the news and how this lady, she's just trying to help, and this evil panhandler killed her. Well, the media should have tried to look beyond the Good Samaritan angle and maybe examined the Cain and Abel angle a little more closely, because now the husband and the stepdaughter of the Sunday school teacher, who they said was killed by a panhandler, well, the police say now that the husband and stepdaughter killed her. That's right. Uh-huh. You'll remember that the claim was that Jacqueline Smith claimed that the Sunday school teacher was fatally stabbed by a panhandler. Uh-huh. I'm sorry, the claim was that Jacqueline Smith was fatally stabbed by a panhandler. But now Baltimore police have arrested the father and the stepdaughter, and widower Keith Smith and his daughter, Valeria Smith. They were arrested by Texas State Police near the U.S.-Mexico border, where they are suspected of trying to flee the country. Why? Well, because they killed the girl's stepmom, and the man killed his own wife. So not Good Samaritan, scratch that. Cain and Abel. Okay, but the Bible has analogous stories for just about every horrible, terrible thing that happens. And everything good that happens.
They say why?
They don't say why. They just caught them. But my guess is...
You didn't get the PlayStation.
There could be a PlayStation involved. But more than likely, this is directly related to sexual immorality. That's my guess.
Yeah.
But we may never know, because by the time the details of this story come out, there will have been 100 other murders piled upon the news cycle, and everyone will have lost track of this one. Because there's so many, it's hard to keep up. All right, now. So that's kind of depressing. Let's go to something that's a little more uplifting. And for that, we go to the God's Amazing Creation file, where we discover that Mako's are the world's fastest shark. Did you know that? He said to his extremely attractive audio engineer. I knew that there were great white sharks, hammerhead sharks, nurse sharks, and whale sharks. Those are the only sharks I was aware of. Okay. But there's this shark called a Mako. Oh, you've heard of it?
I heard the name.
Okay, so this is the world's fastest shark. And here's why. The Mako's scales, which are called denticles, are translucent, flexible, and shaped like tiny shark teeth. The denticles are streamlined so that from nose to tail, the shark's skin feels smooth. But if you rub your hand in the reverse, it feels rough like sandpaper. Yeah. And the shark can control these denticles. The water flow changes when a Mako shark is swimming. Its denticles rise automatically, and this occurs in about 0.2 milliseconds. The denticles rise or they sit back down. Yeah. So researchers have found that additional pressure and drag in the water is reduced significantly by the denticles. Researchers have already found the Mako's denticles work well in the air and not just in the water. And that's why the Air Force is studying, the Army and the Air Force are studying this shark's scales. Yeah, the research is being funded by Boeing and the U.S. Army, and it could impact how aircraft are built. It could lead to more drag-resistant coatings based on examination of an imitation of God's amazing creation. Now, if you couldn't even design a simple algorithm to tell me how this shark's denticles evolved the way they did, it's just not possible. You could probably do it if I was really stupid. You could probably write something convincing if I were a moron, but I'm not. And the fact that we're reverse engineering these things, it should set off a light in people's minds that this was all engineered. That's why we have to reverse engineer it, is because it was all engineered in the first place. All right. There you go. The Mako. Sounds great. I hope I could get, I want some of that on my car. I like it. Meanwhile, do we want to offend any Trump supporter? Are there any Trump supporters in the audience? By the way, I am a Trump supporter. I support the idea that I want Donald Trump to do right, and to love God and to be loved by God. So I consider myself a Donald Trump supporter. Politically, meh, not so much. And here's why, is that I always remember Donald Trump as a fast-talking liberal Democrat. That's what he was my whole life, up until like 10 minutes ago, right? So, I mean, color me skeptical or cynical or whatever you want. I just find it hard to believe that a man goes from a fast-talking, smooth-operating, somewhat underhanded, possibly mafia-connected, sexually immoral Democrat, how all of a sudden he's the savior of the republic. So forgive me, okay? Anyway, do we want to offend? I'm just going to let it out there, okay? Okay, Kamala Harris, you're familiar with Camel Hairs? I'm going to call her Camel Hairs. Camel Hairs is a mad dog leftist sociopath hell-bent on destroying the nation and getting as many people killed as possible. That's Camel Hairs, all right? Well, it turns out that in 2013, Donald Trump donated $6,000 to Camel Hairs' campaign for California Attorney General. And Donald Trump's pro-abort daughter, Ivanka, she gave Camel Hairs $2,000 for her political campaign in 2014. So these aren't youthful indiscretions, and Ivanka and Trump just didn't know any better. I mean, Kamala Harris was running in San Francisco one of the most rabid, left-wing, frothing-at-the-mouth, liberal maniac places on the planet. And Trump and his evil daughter Ivanka donated. Kamala Harris eventually went on to become the San Francisco District Attorney, then the Attorney General, and then United States Senator. So, I mean, that sounds like the political pedigree of the actual Antichrist. You'd start as the San Francisco DA, then become Attorney General, and then you'd graduate into full satanic splendor in the United States Senate, where you could. So anyway, Donald Trump was one of her big supporters. Why? Because he was a fast-talking, pro-abort leftist Democrat for like 60 years. 65 years. And then he had some kind of conversion. All right. Color me skeptical, that's all. All right, now speaking of president, Colorado has, well, our flaming homosexual governor and his husband. Hold on, let me choke back a little vomit. Jared Polis has signed a law in Colorado that would allot our electoral college votes to whoever wins the national popular vote. All right. So CNN reports that listen to how CNN reports this. So they say that there's a growing trend. Different states are passing this law. And CNN says the trend comes as Americans have shown greater support in recent years for a more democratic presidential election process. Doesn't that all sound good to all you democracy worshipers out there? Me, I'm not a big fan of democracy. In fact, it scares me. In fact, what Colorado just did today, or this past week, when Jared Polis... gotta choke that back every time I say his name. When Jared Polis signed this law, they're basically giving... they're giving the votes of Colorado basically to California and to New York because, well, I mean, if you look at the last election, if it weren't for California and New York, Trump would have won the popular vote and the presidency. But because of California and New York, because they're full of socialist, leftist, maniac, queers, and piles of freaks and weirdos, I mean, those freaks, creeps, and weirdos on the coasts can outvote all of us here in the middle. Which is why democracy is dangerous, and the this decision to, I mean, it really is something of just a rearrangement of the deck chairs on a sinking ship. Don't get me wrong. But basically, they've given our votes away. So let's see. They say that the legislation will only take effect if other states sign on to secure the cumulative 270 electors necessary to elect the president. All right. Anyway, you go ahead and rearrange the deck chairs because I feel like the next lurch to the left, I mean, we saw it in 2008. It was terrifying that we could go that far left with such a maniacal, evil person as Barack Obama. The next lurch to the left will be the biggest ever, and it will likely be the final lurch to the left before the Second Civil War. Gotta come back. Angus, get a hold of that guitar. Come on now. Doesn't even bother with a second take. Just go with it. It's fine. All right. So, by the way, I'm not advocating civil war. I'm not a man of violence. No, not at all. But I think we can see that as sides are divided and lines are drawn, that there's going to come a point when cooler heads are not going to prevail. That is going to come. I think the reaction we saw in New Zealand. The Christchurch massacre is it's a harbinger of what is going to come when all the sides are lined up and everybody has pushed the other side as far as you can push the other side. And I shouldn't even say it that way. When the left has pushed the normal people, when the socialists and the maniacs and the queers and the perverts and the deviants have pushed the normal people as far as they can, then at some point the normal people are going to fight back. And most of the normal people now are godless anymore. And so it's going to be a bloodbath. The second Civil War will make the first one look like a Girl Scout bake-off. That's what it'll look like. All right. Meanwhile, we go to the decline and fall file, where leading economists are predicting that, well, they're not predicting, but they are saying that New York City is closer to an all-out financial bankruptcy than it's been in 40 years. How do we know this? Because about 40 years ago, New York actually went bankrupt. But this time it's a little different. You see, they rearranged some deck chairs there with the tax system, and they took away everybody in New York and California. The federal government took away their ability to write off their state property taxes. They're enormously, egregiously, confiscatorily high state income and property taxes being the big one. And so now all these rich people are fleeing California and New York because now they used to could at least write that off, make it up somewhere, but now they got nowhere to hide. And so people are willing to live in Wyoming. It's gotten that bad. I mean, most of the people are fleeing right now to Florida, which means eventually Florida will have an enormously egregious property tax. Because it's really weird that people flee these states and then they tend to reproduce what they left. It's very strange. That's exactly what's happened here in Colorado since the 1970s. Colorado used to be a rugged Western state. Now it's run by liberals and our governor has a husband. Our male governor has a husband. And that's because everyone from California fled here back in the 80s and the early 90s and they've destroyed the place. All right. One chief economist says New York is already in a difficult financial position. It would be in an impossible situation if there were any kind of setback, if there were any kind of recession or anything like that, New York will teeter over the edge. Spending is up over 30% since communist de Blasio took office. He's raised spending for New York City at triple the rate of inflation. He's increased the workforce by over 30,000 people just in the last 5 years. New York City and the state, by the way, are ranked number one nationwide in state and local tax burden. Yeah, sounds about right. Homeowners are getting killed by the federal property tax deduction changes, and they're relocating to lower tax states. And for all you communists and liberals out there who want to chase the rich out of New York, or you want to tax the rich, or you hate the rich, or whatever. You want to eat the rich. The top 1% of New York City earners pay 50% of the income taxes in the city. So they're carrying more than half of you slackers. And maybe they are jerks, and maybe you don't like them. But without them, you're going to starve. Your whole city's going to go bankrupt. All right, that's fine. I have no plans to go to New York, move to New York, live to New York. If I did something really bad, I would fear being imprisoned in New York. I remember that movie from the 80s, Escape from New York. That's how I felt every time we turned down that road toward the Holland Tunnel. I'm like, please just get me out of here. And you get to the other end, it's New Jersey. You're like, oh my. What have I done to deserve this? All right. All right, so let's get to the health file. We don't do this a lot.
Health file.
The health file, yes, so... We know that there is an epidemic of childhood obesity, right? Everybody's aware of that. We hear about it all the time. There's an epidemic of childhood obesity. Well, the University College of London carried out a study, and they looked at 20,000 families. So that's a fairly significant study. I think the data that's generated, if it was done honestly, is something that's worth looking at. And they say that their study found that children whose mothers work are more likely to have increased sedentary behavior, poorer dietary habits, and they tend to be fat. So childhood obesity is in part to blame on our society's insistence that moms go off to work. Forcing mothers into the workplace is hurting children. Imagine that. And they say it's even worse for single mothers. Single mothers who work full-time have revealed a similar pattern, but with worse numbers for the fatness of their kids. Their kids are even fatter. But it's similar to patterns of moms who work and have a partner, but not a husband, partner. If they might have said husband in the study, but the son, the paper where I downloaded this story, they used the word partner. Now, it's amazing that they're allowed to publish anything bad about single mothers, because we're supposed to worship single mothers, you know. Single mothers are the greatest thing ever. They're superior to all of us. They're the true heroes. But it turns out raising children is too hard for one person to do as well as it can be done. You might be able to pull it off, and in some rare circumstances, the kid may end up being amazing. But most kids are hurt when they lose either their mother or their father, whether it's through divorce or death or anything. It's not good for the kid. Basically, the bottom line of the study, kids of single working mothers are 25% more likely to be overweight. That's right. Kids of moms who work full-time are about 30% less likely to eat a regular breakfast, about 20% more likely to watch more TV than they should. The study also suggested that fathers become more active players in promoting their kids' well-being. Oh, what happened here? The editor must have missed that. That obviously should have said partner. Partners should be more active. No, they're probably quoting the active study where the study, or the actual study, and the study actually used the word fathers. So there you go. The fact that we've all been bamboozled into believing that women should work outside the home, well, it's taking its toll not only on the minds of the children, we talked earlier about their minds, it's taking its toll on their bodies. And the best situation would be for one man and one woman to get married and stay together for life, and then both of them raise all of their children. And the father should go out and work himself into an early grave, and the mother should stay home and take care of the kids. That's how it should work, all right? That's the ideal. I mean, except for the early grave. If there's a way to avoid that, I'm all for it. All right. Now, what do we have here? I don't want to do this. I don't want to do that. Oh, here we go. Airbnb. I was in another dreadful Airbnb. How was this one? Wasn't as dreadful. The thing I've noticed about Airbnbs is they've got some of the most obvious do-it-yourself attempts to fix stuff. It's like if what's the deal? If you have an Airbnb, are you just compelled to never put another nickel into it ever, no matter what happens? I mean, it's just some of the most outrageous do-it-yourself. I mean, anyway. Maybe I just need a better class of Airbnb, I guess. I'm sure that's the case. Anyway, we've got a fella in Australia didn't pay an Airbnb bill for $149, so the Airbnb owner choked him to death. Okay, now here's the thing. In the past, I had to stay at an Airbnb a night longer because I got trapped in a snowstorm. I didn't know, how am I going to pay these people? What am I supposed to do? They came knocking at the door in the morning to ask me why I was still there. And I said, well, there was a snowstorm and I'm stuck here. And the thing is I just negotiated with them to pay them whatever I ended up paying. And then nobody was strangled to death. But even had I skipped out on the bill, or even if they had tried to extort me for some outrageous amount of money, never would it have crossed my mind to physically assault them in any way. And I certainly wouldn't have thought about choking anyone to death. But in our modern civilization, our culture that's soaked in innocent blood from the South Pole to the North Pole in Australia, New Zealand, every place in between, the shedding of innocent blood is as common as popping a throat lozenge when you feel like you're going to cough. Well, every little disagreement now has the potential to erupt into violence and bloodshed and murder. I mean, it's $149. Really? You choked the guy to death? That's just, well, that's where we are. All right, what else? Finally, ladies and gentlemen, finally we go to another study. Researchers, this is from the Science File, researchers announced that one of the contributors to heart disease and Alzheimer's may be age-damaged skin in older adults. Your skin! Yeah, dermatologic researchers say that as your skin ages, it begins to break down, and the immune system starts to release an unhealthy profile of inflammatory cytokines. Yeah. And so you end up with these inflammatory proteins all throughout your skin, and guess what? Your skin is the largest organ on your body. And these tiny inflammatory cytokines can leak into your circulation system. You get enough of them in there, they trigger body-wide inflammation. Researchers are calling the premature aging and the possible connections to Alzheimer's and heart disease, they call it inflammo-aging. Yes. The inflammation, they say, to have a significant deleterious impact must come from an organ big enough that very minor inflammation can affect the whole body. And they say the skin is a good candidate because it's the largest organ on your body. Yeah. So it could be that the skin has very minor inflammation. And because it's such a large organ, it elevates circulating cytokine levels, inflammatory cytokines. You know, they say scientists have long questioned why there were so many inflammatory cytokines in the circulation system of older adults. This has been well documented. And now they feel certain that the culprit is dry, cracked skin. So, what else can I leave you with than that age-old sage advice? Moisturize, moisturize, moisturize. That's it, folks. That's the Weekly Worldview. I'm Doug McBurney. Thank you for listening. I want to thank my friends at KGOV.com. Go check them out. I want to thank my friends at RealScienceRadio.com. Go check that one out. And at American Right to Life. And, of course, my other brother, Daryl, who makes it all happen. Here in the Weekly Worldview studios, should the Lord tarry, we will return next week. And until then, may the grace of God go with you. And may the peace of Jesus Christ be upon you.